Daisy.
And I'm Terry.
And this is the Monday Mindset Podcast,
where we share things of interest to us and hopefully to you.
So let's get started with episode number 3. This week it's Terry's turn to share something that she's found interesting. So what have you got to share with us, Terry?
Well, Daisy, you probably know I always kind of joke that I'm the woo-woo one. So for some people, this may sound a little woo-woo, but I think it's really fascinating that there's actually science behind it too. So I listened to a YouTube of a TED Talk by a doctor named Lisa Rankin, and it's called, Is There Scientific Proof We Can Heal Ourselves? And I am very interested in the mind-body-spirit connection and the power of our brain or our mind to heal our body. So this whole TED Talk that she did was really about what she has researched and learned about the power of our body to heal and how we think affects that, and then the science behind it, so that it's not just a belief that, yes, your mind can heal you, but really digging into more about why that happens. In her talk, she talks about how what we think and what's going on, what we believe, how that helps us to heal. And I think a lot of people are a little skeptical of this and want some evidence for it. So she draws a lot on some research that has been compiled by something called the Institute of Noetic Sciences. And this was a new title for me, so I had to look it up. But it's basically the people who look at how beliefs, thoughts, and intentions affect the physical world. So kind of consciousness and its effect on us and the world. So one of the things she used for a lot of the background on this was something called the Spontaneous Remission Project that the Institute of Noetic Sciences published. And it's 3,500 cases of spontaneous remissions of diseases and conditions that otherwise are known to be quite lethal, stage 4 cancers and things like that. So the fact that people just can suddenly be relieved of these diseases seems really interesting to study. In her talk, she talks about the concept of the placebo effect, which probably all of us have heard of at some level. And she also talks about the nocebo effect. And the placebo effect is when you give someone an inert treatment, and interestingly, even fake surgeries, which I don't even want to know how they do that.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
But the fact that people can heal from getting a treatment that is inert, that is not even a medication or an actual treatment. And she shares this story that I thought was really fascinating. And this was from, I think, 1957 here in the US. A man was in very end stages of his life with lymphatic carcinoma, I believe. There was a new medication trial starting, and the doctor had to be able to indicate that the patient had at least 3 months to live in order to qualify for doing the trial. But this patient had researched it and really wanted the treatment, and the doctor said, okay. He was so persistent, he finally gave in, and he gave him the medication. I think the medication was something like Creviosin. It sounded a little bit like a Harry Potter spell to me, but I think it was called Creviosin. And so he gave it to him on a Friday. He injected the medication on Friday and went home for the weekend. And he expected that the patient actually wouldn't even live through the weekend. He came back on Monday, and the patient's tumors had shrunk down to half their size. Wow. Prior to that, he had like huge tumors in his armpits and all over. And 3 days later, they had shrunk to half their size. 10 days later, they were gone. So 2 months into his treatment, after he had had this treatment, they came out with information that they didn't think the Creviosin actually was effective. And when the patient heard this, he was obviously really upset about this, and the tumors returned.
No way.
So the doctor got this information and he thought, you know, I've got to do something for this guy. And so he said, look, I need to tell you, the Creviosin that I gave you was not effective. We found that that was a bad batch, but I have a good clean batch now. And so he really just injected him with some saline solution. And again, the guy's tumors went away. He was doing great. So now he's 4 months beyond the first treatment. And then the officials come out with final results of their study that they said the creviosin had no effect and it was not going to be continued. And then very soon after that, the patient died. And so the idea that he was given an inert treatment and his tumors actually shrank and went away. It wasn't just that he reported feeling better. His disease actually went away, or evidence of the disease. And then once he knew that it didn't work, he died. So that's an example of the placebo effect. And the nocebo effect is when you're told that something bad will happen from something, and by believing that, you do create that. So for example, there were triplets born, and the midwife who delivered them said that they were cursed. And I don't remember why they were cursed, but supposedly they were cursed. And she said that they would die. One would die by their 16th birthday, one by their 21st, and one by their 23rd. And sure enough, the first one died like within a week of her 16th birthday, the next one by the 21st. And the third one went to the hospital on the day of her 23rd birthday or the day before because she was so panicked about this. I think she was put on a ventilator and she died the next day or died that night.
Wow.
So the power of the negative belief of what's going to happen and the power that that has as well. So this whole science around how what we think, how it affects our body's ability to heal. And you and I talked some about that in our last episode about the stress response. And what this doctor talked about is the idea that, as you brought up last time, this chronic stress that many of us are under, but it could be related to various things in our lives. It could be related to relationships. It could be related to finances, career, any of those areas of our lives where we need positive things to support us. But if we're experiencing stress in those things, the physiological effect on that, because it affects our hormone responses and it puts us, as we talked about before, into a fight or flight mode. It's a neuro process, the hormones and our neurotransmitters. And then unfortunately, things like norepinephrine, cortisol, and epinephrine create the stress response. And those are actually chemicals that keep us in that state of duress and we can't heal. And so if you think about the fact that we have so many stress responses going on, that when we're in a chronic state of stress, we have these affecting our chemistry all the time. So that's our sympathetic nervous system that's been enacted. And then when we get relief, when we can calm down, when we get relief from the stress, it's then our parasympathetic nervous system, which releases other chemicals like dopamine, oxytocin, nitric oxide, and endorphins. And this is when we heal. But it's only when our body is in this relaxed place that we can heal. And that does not bode well for us if we're in a chronic state of stress. And so going from this idea of the placebo effect and really learning that it's not just a belief that happens, but that that belief affects our chemical processes going on in our body, whether we stay in a state of illness or disease or whether we can be in a state of healing.
Yes, I was going to say, it totally makes sense why a placebo could work, because it kind of just gives you permission to give yourself over to the state of being that you need to be in to heal.
Yeah.
Just by making that leap, just by making that leap of faith that you believe something's going to work, you automatically start switching off some of those, a lot of those stresses.
Right.
And by doing that, you put yourself in this kind of situation where you're more likely to heal.
Right. So as those stress responses are turned off, the chemicals can change so that healing can happen. And then she also talked about some researchers look at the idea that it's not only the treatment itself that is the placebo, but the healer. the doctor, the therapist, whoever the healer is, that they are the placebo. She talked about an example where one doctor actually told the patients, I'm giving you a placebo. There is nothing effective in this treatment. And they still got better.
Wow.
So just the idea that having someone believe in them, care for them, nurture them, again, created this switching off of the stress response and allowed those healing chemicals to take place, that they got better. So again, what we think and having someone work with us as a healer, the power of that. So again, it's not just some weird coincidence that this idea of the placebo effect works.
Well, that makes sense too. The person being the placebo thing that you talk about, it reminds me of something that Dr. Chatterjee, we're both fans of his podcast, but he talks about his own practice and some things that he used to do. And he talks about over and over again, the value of being able to give enough time to properly listen to his patients. That's a huge problem in the NHS, and I think probably every health system everywhere, that the doctor you go to see doesn't have enough time to properly listen to what you have to say. I have to say, actually, as a side note, mine is very good. The downside of that is that when you go for an appointment, you know you're going to have to wait for a very, very long time because once you're in the door, he listens to what you have to say. But anyway, Dr. Chastity talked about this, and he was talking about he actually got in trouble at work for this. But where he lived, a lot of the workers in the area, I can't remember what it was they did, worked in a factory or something, I think, were having problems, couldn't come to his surgery during normal, regular working hours. And so he would come in an hour earlier so that he had the time to see them so that they could go and see him on the way to work, for example. And the benefits of that, above the obvious of them just having a time they could go, the healing benefits of that were magnified just by the fact that somebody was listening, caring about them enough to turn up an hour earlier for work every day just so that he could be there for them. That's the same kind of thing, isn't it? It's having a faith in somebody who's helping you. But more than that, knowing that they listen to you and that they care.
Absolutely. So it added or enhanced the actual treatment that could be going on because they knew the healer was invested in them. Absolutely.
It's a difficult thing, isn't it? I hear that a lot. Positive mental attitude plays a big part in how quickly and how well you heal from something.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a bit of a tricky one. I think it depends how you look at it. I know it's something that the cancer specialist talked about with my stepfather, and I think he said to my mother about how the way a patient thinks can have a massive impact on how long they survive when they've been given a terminal diagnosis. And that patients can go downhill very, very quickly when they give up mentally.
Absolutely.
And the downhill slide is much, much quicker. And I know I saw that with my stepfather, with the opposite. When he started being able to do things again, he started being able to work on his cars again. He has this vintage car that he was building. And the roll-on effect and the general well-being it gave him was, you know, was profound and definitely extended his life. And he still had some of the physical problems that the cancer was causing, but it really did help. But I think the thorny side of it is that you then get into, and justifiably, people can get annoyed thinking that they feel like some kind of failure if they can't think themselves out of a condition like that. And I don't know how to balance the two. You hear these stories like you mentioned, where people effectively reverse a dreadful condition. And I don't think it works this way. I don't know what you'd have to say about it. But in theory, logically, you should be able to switch that on to somebody who's just been given a terminal diagnosis and somehow get them to positively, mentally think their way out of it. And obviously, that's not necessarily possible. I don't know how you balance those two sides.
Yeah, it's actually something I've struggled with sometimes. Even I'm a big follower and believer in like the law of attraction. Mm. And the one hesitation I have is I don't want people to interpret that to mean that they are to blame per se for negative things. And I think that's how I used to interpret it. And so I had a really pretty strong resistance to believing in it because I didn't want people to blame themselves. For example, if they had a terminal condition, that they created it. But I think the other thing to think about, she talks about even with spontaneous remission and the placebo effect, what they really find with it is it's something like 18 to 80% of people experience positive results from a placebo. So that's a really wide range. Mm. If it said 90% of all people can do whatever with a placebo, yeah, I think that would apply more to what you're describing. But the fact that it can be as low as 18%, it tells us that it's not going to work all the time and for everyone. And it doesn't mean necessarily that they have failed somehow or didn't think themselves into healing correctly. But to me, just the idea that it increases my odds of healing that much by changing how I'm thinking and what I'm believing, it's worth working on that just to increase the odds of healing rather than using it as a way to guarantee or then blame.
Also, you can again see why the placebo could work because you could want to think yourself out of something with all the will in the world, but you can't necessarily do it. You can't force that. Mm-hmm. But of course, the placebo effect takes that element away. You haven't got to try and force it. It's just something that you can take and automatically put yourself in that mindset.
Mm-hmm. So to me, an example of how I would want to use placebo versus nocebo effect is, you know, use the example of cancer treatment. And I think if someone is in a really good place mindset-wise and believes that the medication is going to heal them and believes in, again, maybe the placebo effect of the healer, their odds are better than the nocebo effect, which they have studies that show this. People who are given, again, an inert treatment but are told it is chemotherapy develop the side effects of chemotherapy, will lose their hair and be nauseous, even though they got a placebo. So the power of, if I were to do a treatment like that, I have to do it because I really believe in it and not focus on the possible negatives of it because I can create those responses as well.
Yes, I think a lot of us have probably seen that in action in a smaller way.
Mm-hmm.
I've definitely nocebo'd my way, can I say that, into a migraine. So that's an easy example for me to think of. The different triggers have been set up, things that I know are likely to cause me a migraine. So it could be, you know, a particularly hot day and I know I've got to be working outside. Smells used to. So, you know, if I knew somebody was going to be wearing perfume that I was going to have to go in a car with, any number of things, if I went forward with that day, with those set of circumstances, the chances are very, very good that I would end up with a migraine.
Absolutely.
And it's only actually by getting far fewer migraines with keto, and I guess believing in the power of keto, from both just believing in the power of it, but having seen the effect of it. I mean, who knows? It could be some totally coincidental thing that caused me to have fewer migraines. But by believing that these triggers aren't necessarily going to give me a migraine, I am less likely to have some. So I could know I was getting in a car with somebody on a very hot day who had perfume on and think to myself, well, I might get a migraine, but I might not. Mm-hmm. The chances are quite good that I won't anymore. So I can see how you can affect change.
Yeah. The other thing she talks about that I think is an interesting part of her research and her work, and she's written, I think, 7 or 8 books. She describes a concept of the health cairn, C-A-I-R-N, and, you know, like the pile of rocks, and that each part of that is part of our life. And so she talks about the value of healthy relationships, healthy professional life, a sense of spiritual connection, creative expression, healthy sexuality, healthy finances, healthy environment, and a healthy mind, that all of these create our whole kind of overall health picture, and that it's important for us to work on each of them. And then also to think about, we can do things to help ourselves relax and reduce the impact of those stress responses by paying attention to those areas. We can get a massage, we can do something creative, we can meditate, we can have sex, we can laugh, we can exercise, we can pet animals. We can do those things to get those healthy healing chemicals going in our bodies. And so I think that's another important concept that I pulled from her talk. And I wanted to share these are pretty stark pieces that come out of research that really stand out to me about the importance of relationships and a healthy lifestyle. So talked about people who have a strong social connection, strong social life, have half the rate of heart disease of those who do not.
Wow.
So married individuals are 2 times more likely to live longer lives than those who are not. Talked a little bit about work stress, and people who do not take their vacations have a 1/3 increased likelihood of heart disease.
Wow.
And people who are generally happy tend to live up to 7 to 10 years longer. And the other one was that people who are optimistic versus pessimistic have a 77% decrease in the likelihood of cardiovascular heart disease or a heart attack. And also, those who attend religious gatherings or some type of a religious ceremony or such, research shows that they tend to live up to 14 years longer than those who don't. So all of these made me really think about, again, not only the placebo and the nocebo, but if I want these healing chemicals more active in my body, what do I need to do? Mm. What can I do to kind of help mitigate some of the stress responses, turn off the stress responses, and be more activating of these calming responses? And it just made me really think about these things. So for example, in general, research has found that we have about 50 stress responses per day. And those of us who describe ourselves as lonely or pessimistic, unhappy, or living with chronic stress, we have at least 2 times as many of these stress responses.
Wow.
And so by listening to her, it's just really a wake-up call to me of, I really want to face, you know, my efforts of managing my stress better, bringing in these other aspects of that health care that she talks about, strengthening those to help mitigate some of these stressors and not allow any one of these areas to become such a stressor for me that it affects my well-being.
Mm. Yeah, lots of interesting things to think about there. And I think the overall message is you've just got to put a bit of work in all these areas, just trying to just improve your level of happiness. That's a bit of a general easy term to throw out, isn't it?
But I think it goes back, Daisy, to what you shared in the last episode about a gratitude journal. Just those times of reflecting on things that you're grateful for, the way that that influenced you to highlight more positive things throughout the day. I think ultimately It encourages to start enjoying things more and find things more positively valuable in our lives. This makes a difference to our overall health outcomes, not just to our quality of emotional life, but to our actual physical health. I think it's amazingly powerful.
Because like you say, it doesn't have to be big things, does it? It's, I mean, as I was listening to you reading those out, I was thinking, oh dear, I'm in trouble. I'm lacking in a lot of those.
Same here.
But you can probably still find small things that you can do to just make little improvements in all of them. And it goes back to what we were talking about in the last episode of it doesn't matter how small it is. I guess it's just trying to push things in the right direction, however slowly it happens and however tiny the increments are. It's all about just starting a momentum, starting a trajectory the right way, isn't it? It seems so much harder, doesn't it? You have that inertia when you feel like you're starting from a really sort of rock bottom position. It takes ages to start pushing forward. But once you start, you do start building a bit of momentum and start adding more things in that are going to start benefiting you.
Absolutely. And I think you're really highlighting again the building of momentum around positive things. And I've also had to be thinking about, what about mitigating the effects of negative things? So you've heard me talk before. I have some neighbors that are bothersome to me. And when they're doing something that bothers me, I really do get a choice of how much I let that affect me. And the more I'm conscious of, is them stomping on their floor, my ceiling, is that worth a stress response? Is that worth a chemical reaction in my body that puts me in this, you know, more vulnerable state for dis-ease and, you know, health conditions? It's not. And so it's challenging me to work toward not only adding in the positive, but again, trying to decrease the effect I let the negative have on me, not to get as bothered by things, not to be as stressed about things, the more I think about the actual physiological impact of that.
That's quite a nice follow-on, isn't it, from last week, to be mindful of the positive moments. But actually, also what you're saying is to be mindful of the negative moments, but in such a way as you're mitigating that negativity as much as possible. So just being aware that it's happening and acting on that accordingly, rather than not being aware and just letting it wash over you and you getting angry or whatever it is. And before you know it, you've started that avalanche into a negative cycle of feelings, but it's being mindful and just stopping it and switching direction before it starts tumbling.
Yeah. And so again, to me, it's that important reminder that really we do get to have an impact on our quality of life and our health by choosing which things we're paying more attention to and where we're putting our energy. If we're paying more attention to stressful things and negative things, that's where our energy will be, and that's where our chemical responses in our body will be prompted. Where if I can work on creating more positive things and therefore putting my energy there, allowing myself to feel more positive feelings, and also then the more positive chemical responses, ultimately that's where I want to be. And so to me, it's really helping remind me of a choice, rather than feeling like we don't have any control over how we think, how we feel, and therefore our health.
Yes, you could almost look at it as you've got this store of energy to use every day. And so you just have to be mindful in those moments and decide how you're going to use it. But you've only got so much to use in one day. You've got your quota. So are you going to use it in that moment to carry on down a negative path and throw away that energy? Or are you going to switch it and try and change it to a positive direction and use it that way?
Absolutely.
Well, We said we were going to keep it bite-size, and we're straying away from that a bit. So we're going to wrap up.
I have lots of pauses in there. So you're going to have a lot of editing to do in there too.
Well, we hope you found this interesting and maybe something that is actionable for you and your life. And if you want to look at the sources for yourself and watch the TED talk that Terry was talking about, you can find all the links in the show notes at mondaymindsetpodcast.com.
We really appreciate you joining us here today, and we hope that you can take this into a great week.
Have a great week.